We need to get a farm bill signed into law before the end of September.
All right, the clock is ticking. That, of course, is Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader from Kentucky, speaking just last week at a Farm Bill Conference Committee meeting. And the senator knows how important this farm bill is to the American farmers, but he's also very excited about what this farm bill does for industrial hemp. And he notes how the conversation around hemp has changed.
And what has now developed into a national consensus, I believe, that industrial hemp deserves a comeback. I think the confusion with its more controversial cousin has largely been eliminated.
There you go. Mitch McConnell says it's okay. But he says,
it's never been easy to make a living as a farmer.
Right. And that's true. That's always never not been true. And on today's show, we're going to ask a question that sort of gets to that. It's the same question I asked Russell Redding last week. How do we make sure that farmers don't get the short end of the stick when it comes to industrial hemp? After a quick word from our sponsor, we'll dive right in. Stick around. Hello, it's Eric. I would love to be able to share a sponsor message with you. You know, I would like to tell you how great someone's product is or a service that they provide, but we don't have it. So if you would like to be a sponsor, please get in touch with us. Email us at podcast@lancasterfarming.com. Please. It's so lonely here without you. On last week's show, I was talking to Russell Redding. He's the Secretary of Agriculture here in Pennsylvania. And I asked him how he thinks farmers can avoid getting the short end of the stick when it comes to industrial hemp. And so what do I mean by that? Well, look, the opportunity to build an industry from the ground up almost never happens. This is the chance of a lifetime for farmers to get involved at the early stages and make sure that they don't get taken advantage of. And so this is a question that I've asked everybody that I've interviewed.
How do we make sure farmers don't get the short end?
So what can farmers be doing now to prepare for this?
And I think this is a good place to jump back into our conversation with Ross Duffield. If you remember from the first episode, he's the farm manager at the Rodale Institute, where they are now in their second year of growing hemp.
It seems like farmers often get the short end of the stick when it comes to markets. How do we make sure farmers don't get the short end of the stick here?
Well, I think that coming from a dairy background and growing up on a dairy farm, one of our biggest complaints was that the middleman always got, you know, the gravy. You know, you look at a gallon of milk and the sales that actually go back to the farmer are nothing compared to what's kept by the processor, or, you know. And I think that's where we need to be ahead of this from the beginning. Farmers are going to be able to grow a very good crop of this, you know, of industrial hemp, and paying them fairly for their price, removing subsidies, because I think that all keeps everything artificially unsustainable. And then we're actually, as taxpayers, paying for that overall. You know, we're paying to have farmers getting low prices. I don't understand that. So let's let the farmer have the fruits of their labor. I mean, 1-2% of the population feeds 300 million people. And if we can put clothing on the back and cars in front and, you know, anything in between, and even make people healthier or treat terrible diseases with a crop that we can grow very well, very effectively, and very affordably, I think that, you know, this is a great way for farmers to reward themselves and reward their land by using a crop that is, you know, both fascinating and frustrating at times, too.
Okay, so what should or could farmers be doing now to prepare for the oncoming hemp production?
I would say that one thing that they could do, regardless if they're going to be growing hemp or not, is diversify their crop rotation. You know, I use a 5-year rotation. I grow wheat, soybeans, corn, and oats or barley. So I have 4 to 5 different crops that are within my rotation. And being able to do so is almost, well, it's required for organic certification, but it's also, you don't have to grow that many, but you have to rotate your crops. And for us, it cuts down on disease pressure, it cuts down on weed pressure, and it also diversifies our bottom line. So my whole farm is not one crop every year. It's usually 5 different crops in different areas every year. I think that just being used to having a different crop to plant and knowing how to manage different crops effectively on your timeline is a good way to just prep yourself. So that way when hemp is able to be grown, you can plug it in instead of a different crop. I think that there's a possibility here to replace corn in the rotation at one point, not all the way, but you know, replace some of your acreage of corn with hemp in certain areas because it fits basically ideally with the same time period as corn. The other opportunity is to add hemp into your rotation as a double crop situation. So it still fits in really well following winter barley harvest. You would take that barley off in mid to late June, and you still have enough time to get hemp in the ground and get a viable crop into September, and then still follow it with winter wheat or another winter grain.
Does growing hemp have any tie-in with climate change?
I think it definitely could. One thing that's really nice about hemp is that it grows really vigorously. So obviously it requires a lot more carbon dioxide to take care of, you know, the carbon cycle. So carbon sequestration is a great way that we could work hemp into the hopefully mitigating this idea of climate change. Because there's no doubt that hemp it's photosynthesizing all the time. So it needs that carbon dioxide, and in turn, it's pulling that carbon from the atmosphere into the plant and in turn into the soil or into a product that will eventually go into the soil. I think it also cuts down on erosion and other problems that we might have, especially if you're looking at heavily tilled grounds. There's some thought that planting hemp on your field borders around, say, cornfields or soybean fields can cut down on the erosion because it's so quick to take off and grow that it'll be in place. And if you get heavy rains like this week we've had, a field of hemp is already well rooted and well supplied, so those roots are in the ground. It's going to help keep the soil where it should be. I think that there's other uses for it. Soil remediation has been another use, especially internationally with hemp. Pulling some heavy metals out of areas that might be problematic. What you do with that product, I'm not exactly sure, but, I think that it fits very well in the system, and in turn can, help the environment, but help put people to work too.
What needs to happen in Pennsylvania in order for us not to screw this up?
What needs to happen in PA in order not to screw it up? I would say that, we still need to pace ourselves a bit with growing it to scale, for reasons I've mentioned before, with letting the marketplace keep up with what we're going. I think the other thing is to not focus so much on where you're going to be a get rich quick kind of farmer with this. CBD is the real focus for a lot of companies and farmers. I've been to a few trade shows and saw that it's all CBD. Well, the industrial uses, I think, are much more attainable in a quicker time period. And I think that they're also much more far-reaching for the industry itself. So I think, having CBD is fine, and growing some hemp for CBD is going to be, ideal, and some people are going to be very good at it. But I think to educate the farmer enough that not all hemp is CBD, nor does all hemp need to be CBD in its nature. One of our big ways that we can prevent, some bankruptcies down the line. I think just time is going to be another way that we don't screw it up, because, every year more and more people are waking up to the fact that this isn't marijuana. But I would say the biggest thing is educating the farmer, educating the consumer, and everybody in between onto what the uses are of industrial hemp, how it's different from marijuana, and where the two can commingle or, cross-pollinate, but not literally, within the system, I think is one of our biggest things that we can do to prevent problems down the road.
Well, there you go. Education is the key. Now, I asked a similar question to Jeff Whaling. You remember him from the second podcast. He's the chairman of the National Hemp Council.
How can farmers benefit? How can they avoid sort of getting the short end of the stick, which is, it seems, what happens to farmers in Pennsylvania a lot of times?
Yeah, and it's one of my great concerns. It is in part the reason that I'm here. You know, I also serve on the Pennsylvania Farmers Union Board of Directors. I hear and know of the plights and the challenges of farmers. You know, my own lands, I can see what the challenges are every single day. So first and foremost, I want to introduce this new crop so that farmers can benefit, and that we can continue to bring generations of new farmers to this industry. And I think that what we really need to understand and to put into place is that anyone who's going to build this industry, and this is the business model that we're working under, will have to have sufficient monies to ensure that farmers who are growing hemp are going to be paid for it, whether or not it works or it doesn't work. That we need to make that investment in them so that they can benefit from this crop and don't have to worry about, well, should I plant soybean or corn, because that's going to be a guaranteed income. I don't know much about this new hemp product. So I think that in that business model, we need to be able to guarantee that we're, at a minimum, we're going to be able to buy that product and take it off their hands. Certainly, I'm not sure if we will be creating a hemp farmers association, but that's one of the things that we want to put into play as well.
Okay, so farmers need to educate themselves. They need to organize. That's similar to what Russ Redding said last week. And here I want to introduce a new voice to the podcast. This is State Senator, Pennsylvania State Senator Judy Schwenk from the 11th District of Pennsylvania. She's been instrumental in bringing this crop back to the state. So here's what she has to say about what farmers can be doing now to get ready.
So what can farmers be doing now to prepare for this?
Well, there
industry?
Are farmers, you know, there's always those first adopters, right? There are farmers out there who are thinking about this, particularly now with the farm economy, you know, being somewhat precarious, that this may be something that they want to grow. I would caution them. I would make sure that they, I would tell them to invest wisely and to watch what's happening in terms of the research and the availability of markets.
Right, we need to build the markets.
Yeah,
before
we can, really yeah. need to do that. I have always tried to be very careful in saying this isn't a panacea. This isn't the next best thing, and you know, happy days are here again. It's good, and it has, I think, a lot of potential, but we're just not there yet.
We'll hear more of my interview with Senator Schwenk in an upcoming episode. But so to recap, education, organization, and taking your time. Those are the takeaways from today's show. That's what farmers can be doing now to get ready for it and also to make sure that they don't get the short end of the stick. Okay, thank you all for listening to today's show. Be sure to go to iTunes and click subscribe so you don't miss anything. And in the meantime, I will see you in the newspaper. Thanks for listening.